talking sports with you as you start your day. This is the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors, with Blaine Bishop, Mark Howard, and Kevin Ingram on 104.5 The Zone.
.703 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop. Kevin off the rest of this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer, who, by the way, did a beautiful job of reminding me that my microphone was off. But whatever the case, we are always powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Visit fourseasonsgarages.com to learn more. But can I tell you, Schaefer, we had a first for some reason. I must have hit my mouse the wrong way and clicked off my microphone. So my apologies.
Who says it's the same day over and over when we have firsts like that today?
Exactly. I don't think it's a first we were aiming for. But guys, we did get a first yesterday from the Big Ten. Kind of a sobering story that they are going to eliminate out of conference games in football this fall. For all their sports, but, you know, football included, and that is going to be very impactful.
Well, no doubt about it. You know, you'll wonder what the other, you know, Power Five schools will do, specifically the SEC. And that's who we follow and care about the most and who really runs college football. So is this something that becomes, you know, that everybody does in the Power Five? It seems as though that probably will, but you're still not sure. So until they make those announcements, I think the SEC, you said, Mark, is meeting next week, probably to determine some of those things. And, man, it's just it's a tough day, you know, when society, a lot of things are changing to now it's affecting going into the fall season. We were all hoping that things would get better. So it's a sign of fear and concern and not sure how the pandemic and this COVID-19, the pandemic has affected everything. And you know, the C-19 has continued to rise in the numbers. And depending on the state you're in, how those numbers look and should you continue to delay and hope for the best and maybe even potentially coming up with a vaccine, you know, by the time you're going to play maybe in October to even into the spring, which a lot of people are speculating that if it gets to that, they potentially, you know, you could place, you know, it won't be spring ball. It will be spring season. So even for this one season. So that's kind of interesting in itself to just think about all these factors and how much revenue all this football brings into the universities all across the country in the Power Five specifically. And then how that trickle down and affect in the other conferences and not being able to play those games, how it affects those guys as well.
Well, and just to illustrate your point, here is what we're losing just from the Big Ten's perspective. September 5th, Michigan at Washington. And Washington, you know, was supposed to be pretty good this year. September the 12th, Ohio State at Oregon. Huge game. One of the games of the year. Oregon, you know, definitely, if not the favorite to win the Pac-12, one of them. And, of course, Ohio State goes without saying. So that would have had a big say, you know, for the selection committee. But then you've got other, you know, games you look forward to. Iowa State at Iowa has been a great game through the years, especially the last few with the Cyclones, you know, rising in prominence. Penn State at Virginia Tech, you know, App State at Wisconsin, App State. You know, has pulled a number of upsets through the years. Miami at Michigan State, Cincinnati supposed to be loaded this year at Nebraska. And lastly, Wisconsin at Notre Dame, on October the 3rd, that would have been played at Lambeau Field, but now no longer. Now the other sports affected include men's and women's cross country, field hockey, and men's and women's soccer and women's volleyball. But obviously, you know, we're thinking football. And again, a loss of revenue, you know, for all those teams involved, and the potential decision would also, Blaine, as you mentioned, affect other conference opponents with 36 scheduled football opponents from a group of five schools that include your alma mater, Ball State, you know, yeah, Bowling
versus
Green.
Michigan.
Yeah.
Man, well, well, come on, can y'all still just can y'all just donate that $2 million or whatever it was gonna be, you know, million. We'll take it. We need it. Come on,
your old
chirp,
roommate Mike New doesn't have to worry. Yeah, about that game this year.
Oh man, I think he's worried more about that he can't get his that check cashed, and then maybe he don't get his new contract cashed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But Blaine, as you mentioned, the SEC athletic directors reportedly will meet Monday in Birmingham, according to SI.com's Ross Dellinger and Pat Forty, and note that in the SEC has teams in seven of the top 11 states with the largest current increases in COVID-19 cases over the last 2 weeks. That's Louisiana, Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, Alabama, and Texas. And they're home to all but four of the league's 14 athletic programs. Mm. And if we can speculate about this, you wonder, you know, if the SEC, you know, will add a game, you know, and make it an even 10 that they'll play in the conference or just go, you know, with the normal, you know, conference load. But whatever the case, you know, the SEC deciding to stay in conference takes away some really good, you know, interconference games that we were looking forward to this year, especially early on, Southern Cal and Alabama.
Yeah, and, you know, but Southern Cal, I mean, they already told their student body that they're going to be off campus. So they had never announced that the football wasn't going to move forward. But, man, it sure looked like that. At least the student body wasn't going to be on campus and maybe wasn't going to be any fans. So I don't know where the Pac-12 is at this point. But, you know, those schools will survive. All the Power 5 schools, they'll survive, you know, and move forward. It's just unfortunate as fans won't get to see football in its normal way, and this is a different time with the pandemic, and it's C-19 that's just affecting the whole world, and it trickled down to you know, sport. All we're hoping that this would be, I guess, mitigated to a certain extent where we could still play football. Well, right now they're going to try to probably delay, it looks like, that and kind of push it, having only conference games, so then they can kind of tweak the schedule if need be within conference within a week's time. That way, you know, teams can still prepare for those opponents. So that's look like where it's going. I don't know. We shall see what all the other conferences in the Power Five do, but that's kind of going to dictate what the other schools do underneath in the Group of Five and how they go about their business. And can those schools survive without playing some out-of-conference games, those first two games of the season, kind of warm-up games, with the Group of Five, how that affects their revenue and their scheduling and really their whole conference.
Yeah, and if you're thinking about Tennessee, for instance, that would, if they decided to stay in conference, and I still think, you know, we're talking maybe about the first week of October, that wouldn't require a whole lot of adjustment maybe on the part of Tennessee. They have four games in September, starting at home against Charlotte, Will Healy's group, and, you know, Charlotte would lose a big check, but a big interconference game at Oklahoma, that was sort of, you know, going to be a great measuring stick to find out about this Vols team, and then back home against Furman, and then Saturday, September the 26th, against Florida. So they might either start the season against Florida or end the season against Florida. They might have to move that game. But when you're talking about the interconference games, and then, you know, or they might just slot it in November the 21st when they would have played Troy. So if the SEC decides to go that way, and it would seem like that would be the case, you know, this is what we're looking at from a Vols perspective.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that's what all the schools are going to be looking at, particularly. So, man, I'm sure they can move around the scheduling within the SEC. That's what they're doing probably right now when they meet on Monday, kind of convene and say, okay, what can we manage through? And yeah, someone can kind of go through all the games and try to set up some things starting October 1st, as you're mentioning, as you're estimating that that's probably something that could happen to delay when you start the season to feel a little more comfortable if you move forward with football.
Yeah, they could go 8, they could go 10. All right, straight ahead, we're going to talk to Andrew Erickson from Pro Football Focus. Fantasy football, of course, on everybody's mind as we hopefully get ready for an NFL season. But first of all, 7:15, or rather 7:13 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. On the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. Mark Howard along with Blaine Bishop. Kevin off this week. Our producer, Jonathan Schaefer, as always, making the magic from the Zone studios. Let's bring in Andrew Erickson with Pro Football Focus, talking fantasy football. Andrew, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Well, hopefully we're going to have some football to talk about, but let's talk about the rankings first of all. And you know, interestingly, you know, with fantasy football, you know, it's all about the playmakers, and you know, who you guys have at the top doesn't really surprise us.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at the guys at the top that are going to see the most carries, the most touches, and overall, that's what you're looking for fantasy football. You got to get those opportunities to turn into fantasy.
And you have Christian McCaffrey, you know, who, you know, obviously puts up big numbers, not only as a runner, but a guy who catches the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of why, you know, you see a guy like Derrick Henry, you know, maybe not as high as some of those other guys, due to the fact that, you know, we haven't seen him really using that passing game, you know, as much as we'd all like to see him, even though it seems like every time he catches a screen pass, he goes all the way to the house.
Huh. Talk about how you ranked your wide receivers.
So the receivers, it really goes by looking again at like total target share of the offense. So again, you're going to see Michael Thomas there at the top, basically across the board. And the reason being is because, you know, you look at that depth chart and there's not really much behind him. They, you know, the Saints added Emmanuel Sanders, but outside of that, you know, they don't really have a lot of guys that are going to look for targets in their offense. So that's why Michael Thomas, you see, is at the top of most of the rankings. And then you have guys like Tyreek Hill, Julio Jones, Davante Adams, as other guys that really dominate the targets in their offenses and also just play on offenses that, you know, the Chiefs are going to score a lot of points. The Falcons are going to score a lot of points. The Packers, you know, maybe their offense may not score as many points as those other offenses. But, again, Davante Adams, you look at their depth chart, you know, Green Bay Packers decided not to draft any receivers in this year's draft and instead, you know, draft running backs and tight ends and fullbacks and things like that. So Adams has a clear path to, you know, to see 150 targets here in 2020.
And you have A.J. Brown of the Titans as your 11th ranked receiver, largely because of his yards after catch.
Yeah, A.J. Brown is a very interesting guy to look at in drafts. He has a ton of upside. Obviously, we saw last year he just absolutely smashed with the limited opportunities that he got. And the way that things are kind of trending is, you know, yes, he may not be able to sustain that type of efficiency year over year, but with the way that the Titans operated last year as a run-heavy offense, you know, that may regress to the mean a little bit where they may have to be more pass-heavy because they may not be able to just, you know, hand the ball to Derrick Henry 30 times a game. So what A.J. Brown may lose in terms of efficiency next year, he actually may gain in terms of volume. And I obviously like him a lot more than, you know, guys like Corey Davis and Adam Humphries, who could potentially take away targets in the offense.
We're speaking to Andrew Erickson from Pro Football Focus.
Yes, Andrew, speaking of A.J. Brown, does the Titans' offense actually, I know you say there's run after catch up with A.J. Brown, but does their offense, the way they spread the ball around, actually hurt their numbers for fantasy football? Because you don't see the targets and the carries as much of those skill guys as most teams.
Yeah, you're definitely looking for concentrated targets and, you know, touches. So you want offenses that it's, like, really easy to predict. Hey, you know, these are the two guys that the offense goes through. So ultimately, it's not great that the Titans like to spread it out. But ultimately, I do think that A.J. Brown, you know, as a rookie, still, you know, he still commanded a lot of targets in that offense, and he looked like the total alpha receiver. So it's hard to really imagine him, you know, not getting more involved as one of the receivers, especially with the connection he seemed to really build with Ryan Tannehill over the last half of the season. So I really like him to kind of take a step up here, and I'm really excited about Jonnu Smith as well at tight end. You know, Delanie Walker is kind of finally out of the picture completely, and Jonnu Smith has really flashed his big play upside, similar to that of A.J. Brown. So as a tight end position where we're really trying to scrape the bottom of the barrel to find effective tight ends after some of the big guys, I really like Jonnu Smith as a guy you can get later in your draft as a tight end with a lot of upside.
So you saying Janu is a sleeper in fantasy, huh? Or who else would be a sleeper?
Yeah, so I guess another sleeper, you know, we'll stick to the tight end position. Looking over at the Miami Dolphins, Mike Gesicki is another tight end. You know, he flashed a lot of athletic upside, you know, in the past couple seasons. And he really has a chance to emerge as one of the primary receivers in that offense, you know, that doesn't really have a lot of receivers like Devontae Parker, you know, outside of Devontae Parker. So, you know, that's what you're looking for when it comes to the tight end position. You're looking for offenses that are kind of weak at the wide receiver position. They don't have a lot of established guys that are really going to be like, oh, like he's going to command a lot of targets. That's what we're looking for when you're looking for, you know, potential tight ends that could really take a step forward in the upcoming season.
Andrew, I'm going to give you a broad question here, and you can run with it. AFC breakdown of all – AFC South breakdown of all the teams, and who should everybody, I guess, look forward to having big numbers?
Yeah, so I guess we'll, the AFC South, you know, just remind me if I don't – hopefully I don't miss any teams. So we'll start with the Titans. So, again, I think that Derrick Henry is not someone necessarily I'm going to be targeting a lot in the first round. That's where he's going to be going drafted just because of the fact that, hey – we're not so sure how useful he's going to be in the passing game, and I'm not so sure that the Titans are going to be able to sustain the type of efficiency they were last year as a red zone offense, where basically they didn't, like, kick any field goals last year. Every time they were in the red zone, they scored a touchdown, and it was well above, you know, any other team last year. So I don't expect that to continue into 2020. So Derrick Henry I'm not so into. A.J. Brown, though, and Jonnu Smith I'm definitely targeting. I like Tannehill as a quarterback you can get later in draft. When it comes to the Jaguars, I really like connection, the wide receiver DJ Chark. He showed a lot of promise last year. He kind of fizzled out a little bit towards the end of the season, which is why he's not going super high in drafts right now. But I think that he's a really valuable receiver that has a wide receiver, you know, a top 12 wide receiver upside with Gardner Minshew. Leonard Fournette is a running back I'm not necessarily looking to target as often. Again, he was not efficient last year as a running back. They gave him a lot of touches and he didn't do anything with them. We have a whole new offensive coming, kind of offensive system coming in. So I'm just not really sure how to project Leonard Fournette for next year. And it seems like the coaching staff, you know, may or may not be set up with him. You know, for trade rumors. So I'm not so sure if Fournette can be super reliable in 2020. And when it comes to the Texans, I like Deshaun Watson. I think that that offense is going to be underrated to the fact that they lost DeAndre Hopkins. I think people are sleeping on Watson a little bit. I think he still has a lot of vertical receivers like Will Fuller, Kenny Stills. They brought in Brandon Cook. And they have two pass-catching running backs in David Johnson and Duke Johnson. So I think that Deshaun Watson can still get enough done with those pass-catching options. And then when it comes to the Colts, I'm not really buying, you know, any type of Phillip Rivers kind of resurgence in a new offense. I mean, I think that he kind of showed us last year the kind of quarterback he's become. You know, these quarterbacks that get older can fall off rather quickly. So Phillip Rivers I'm not really interested in looking at. And the same kind of goes for guys like T.Y. Hilton. He's dealt with a lot of injuries over the past couple of seasons, lower leg injuries. We've seen this with some of these older players, so not looking to buy into Hilton. But again, with it comes to the Colts, I'm looking at that running game, and I'm looking at Jonathan Taylor, and I just think that just a matter of time before, you know, they see what he can do behind that offensive line, which PFF ranked as, you know, the number one offensive line going into next season. And I think that Jonathan Taylor, you know, you're going to draft him and immediately know, wow, this guy could be, you know, is going to put up monster numbers for your fans.
For me is, who are you in the AFC South? And maybe all over.
I'm sorry, could you ask that one again?
Who are you down on this year going into the season? Not just AFC South, but just all the conferences combined as well.
Yeah, so I guess a player I would say I'm probably more down on than most would be someone like DeAndre Hopkins. I'm not so sure of the type of, you know, we've seen with, you know, top-end receivers moving from team to team, you know, give an example, obviously Odell Beckham Jr. last year moved from the Browns or moved it from the Giants to the Browns and just didn't really work out that well. He was rather disappointing. And now you have Hopkins, who's been basically, you know, a really productive receiver with the Texans, with Deshaun Watson. And now he's obviously moving to Arizona with a different quarterback, Kyler Murray. So I just don't know. I don't know if he's going to pay off as, you know, being a top five wide receiver like he's going to be drafted as just because of the new surroundings, especially considering, you know, all that's going on right now in terms of how can they build a connection, you know, the new offense and things like that. So I'm just not so sure that he's going to pay off where he's going to be drafted.
We're on with Andrew Erickson, fantasy football analyst.
Andrew, you guys kind of downgraded Ryan Tannehill despite the great year that he had And he's a mobile quarterback, so he can get you some yards with his legs as well as his arm.
Yeah, so when it comes to Ryan Tannehill, I'm just looking where we have him. So we have him over at, you know, our at quarterback 21, it looks like. So the way with Tannehill, and maybe I think I'm a little bit higher than our consensus here is with his ranking here. And I agree. I think that Tannehill does have some upside as a runner. I just think it goes back to the fact that we've seen a large sample of Ryan Tannehill, you know, from his days in Miami. And then obviously we saw an 8-game sample with him just absolutely play above expectations last year. So I think it's more or less just kind of tempering expectations. Like, it's not fair to necessarily just project his what he did last year and just project it through an entire season, because what they were, the whole Titans offense last year was just absurdly efficient across the board. And it just doesn't make sense from a projection standpoint to project them for that type of ceiling. Obviously, we know that, hey, when Tannehill's firing all cylinders, this is what he can do. But with projections, we want to be a little bit more to the median when we look at them. So I still think Tannehill's a viable quarterback that you can get later, because I think, like you said, he adds value with those legs. But again, if the Titans ultimately do what they want to do, which is to run the football, that's going to limit Tannehill as a passer, because he's just not going to be throwing for, you know, he's not going to be throwing 40 times a game like some of these other quarterbacks.
With, you know, no OTAs, without, you know, mini camps, with a much different preseason, with only two games, and more of it, you know, concentrating on practice, how tough is it to evaluate the rookies?
Yeah, it is obviously much tougher to kind of see, because we don't get to see them, you know, any preseason reps or mostly, you know, preseason reps. So, again, you know, you always want to be kind of wary with rookies anyway. When it comes to tight ends, there's really not much there. You know, rookie tight ends are very, very, very difficult to see them really impact. Rookie running backs, I would say it's less than important. I still think that rookie running backs can still have an impact, even if it's, you know, because if you're the best running back on your team, like, you're still going to make an impact. So guys like Jonathan Taylor, for example, I'm not really too concerned about. But when it comes to the receivers, I think that people get really excited about the rookie wide receivers, especially, you know, all the first and second round picks that get drafted. I think those are the guys you need to be wary of, but also pay attention to, because I think that the rare rookie receiver that does produce, you know, at an early, you know, if he produces in week one or week two, you know, explodes for you like a big game, I think that's very indicative. Like, wow, like, this receiver put up big numbers without all the preseason reps, without, you know, these practice reps, and he's still able to produce. Like, that is a major indicator of a guy that could really put up big numbers. And a guy I like specific for that reason is Brandon Ayuk, who got drafted by the Arizona Cardinals in the first round. He has a very, very ample opportunity ahead of him because of the injury to Deebo Samuel. So if there's any rookie wide receiver I'm going to take, it's going to be Brandon Ayuk.
Andrew, great stuff. We can't wait for football to start. Let's hope there is football, but we'll speak to you down the line.
Praying every day. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Andrew Erickson from Pro Football Focus. And Blaine, I'm not a big fantasy football player, I'll admit, but the rankings always intrigue me. You know, and A.J. Brown got high marks. Corey Davis, it's interesting. They did a synopsis, you know, of a lot of the players in the top 150. And Corey Davis's was that he had zero catchable deep balls in 2019 per Pro Football Focus, but remains a talented young player who is set up to be the Titans' number two pass game option. You've talked about this on numerous occasions.
Yeah, you know, and it just sounds weird to me. Numerous opportunities to catch deep balls? How does that happen throughout a whole season? This guy's 6'3", runs a 4.4, probably less than that, and he gets leader opportunities. So that must change, and I think maybe that went to the history of him as a younger player and coming into the league and really trying to throw a lot of deep balls to him, and then kind of going back to, okay, let's run some routes, be a route runner first, then the deep balls will come. So I'm expecting a big season out of Corey Davis. I was hoping he was saying Corey Davis is going to be a sleeper, but he did not. So, man, I don't know if that's a good sign for the Titans in that he's not a sleeper, and that means no big season. That means nine in the box and doubling A.J. Brown. That's what it tells me. So Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis better have big years.
Yeah, and A.J. Brown had better get used to coverages now, you know, being designed to really stop him first. But the other thing about the Titans, where you've got to look for some regression, you know, an area where you're just not going to, you know, where you just can't expect them to duplicate the numbers that they put up last year, and that's in the red zone. I mean, their red zone numbers were off the charts. So what's going to happen this year as they regress a little bit, and what is the effect going to be on their one loss record? You know, because obviously their kicking numbers are going to have to be better. They're going to, you know, they're going to need more sacks. You know, there are other numbers in other areas, but, you know, if you look for, you know, an area where the Titans just can't possibly be as good as they were last year, Blaine, it's got to be the red zone.
Right. I mean, they were almost perfect. And that's why you must have automatic by the kicker. You get in the red zone, you don't score TDs, the 38-42 yarder has to be like automatic. It's no way around it, because guess what? This is a field goal league. And when I say that, means that's how much you're winning and losing ball games. So the kicker is very vital. We all make fun of the kickers. You know what? They go over in their corner and they work on their craft. But when they get on the football field, you depend on them. And so I would assume that the kicking game will pick up and have more opportunities, because they won't be as good as they were last year. That was almost perfection.
Yeah, and an underrated loss to me, you know, for them roster-wise, was Tajay Sharpe.
I love Sharpe.
You want, but he made a contribution as the number four receiver, and the Titans weren't exactly aggressive, you know, in going out and trying to, you know, find, you know, his replacement in free agency. There are a lot of, you know, good ones still out there, the Taylor Gabriels and guys like that. But they got a bunch of undrafted free agents that, you know, maybe they're banking on. And I don't know if this is the year you want to do that.
Yeah. Tajay Sharpe, you could say he was number four, but he was really number three with Adam Humphries out for a lot of the season. And, man, he didn't miss a beat. And, oh, by the way, I think I remember him against the Jaguars beating Jalen Ramsey deep, who is the best in the business. So I think Tajay Sharpe is better than people think, and I really appreciate how he goes about his business as far as on the football field. He's a great route runner. I told you his game is going to translate to being the number three in this league for a long time, and he may bounce around the team in that nature, because he really probably thinks he can be a number two. But, man, I think he's a polished wide receiver, and he's going to play at least 10 years in this league and be effective, and a guy nobody's going to pay attention to and is going to get a lot of one-on-one matchups.
All right, we're going to sort of take that point and talk about goal line offenses and what you see and what you don't see anymore in the NFL. 7:37 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. .44 on the Wake Up Zone, powered by All Four Seasons Garage Doors. Mark Howard, along with Blaine Bishop and our producer, Jonathan Schaefer. Kevin Ingram is off until Monday. All right, guys, we talked about fantasy football, but let's get a little bit closer to the end zone. Good story on ESPN.com about best teams inside the five-yard line. And to no one's surprise, the Titans posted a 72.7 successful play rate inside of the five-yard line last season. And, Blaine, I'll let you list all the reasons why.
Well, I don't know if I know all the reasons why besides the king. But that's it. I mean, inside the red zone, we're not just talking about passing the football, also running the football, and that sets up the pass. It's just kind of interesting that, you know, the Titans were really good inside the red zone and scoring touchdown. It's something that you have to put emphasis on in practice and run multiple plays and understand how you have advantages versus not, you know, just the other teams, but where you have advantages on your own team. So I thought they were very effective. It's interesting to see if they can duplicate that. I think they'll be pretty good again, but man, they were almost flawless. And then not to have a, you know, a big-time receiver just to throw the fade route or the fade stop or the fade out. It's kind of interesting in how that never materialized. And I think that's kind of going around in the league because it became, you know, something that was trendy. And you got to have a certain type of receiver to really make those kind of plays happen. And I don't think the Titans have that kind of receiver. So in that case, most guys don't. Some 6'4", super athletic guy, and you throw it up there like you're playing basketball and say, tell that little 5'11 DB to go home like myself, and you'll win that 9 out of 10 times.
Well, you kind of stole my thunder there. But just to back it up for just a second, the Titans had all the elements, you know, for success inside the five. Their offensive line, especially the way it played, once it was intact and Tannehill was a quarterback, and a mobile quarterback who can boot it when he has to. So that'll keep a defense on its toes. But you mentioned the fade, and they're lamenting the depth of the fade. You know, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, might have been, if he wasn't the best of all time, he was one of the best.
As far as the fade route, correct?
The fade route, absolutely. Yeah. Almost unstoppable with his size and his technique. But last year, just 13.5% of the 37 fades attempted were successful, compared with 57% of flat routes, 42% of slants, and 42.5% out of out routes. And, you know, I was going to ask you, as someone who's been there and done that, how do you account for those numbers? Do you just think it's, you know, the lack of those, you know, those big, tall receivers who had such a big advantage?
Well, I'm sure that contributed greatly there, Mark. But, you know, I think it goes through trends because all he has to do is really a 50-50 ball, really, at the end of the day. And timing with the quarterback, something you have to work on a lot with your receiver unless you have a super talented one. And then the fade stop to me was the one that was devastating. That was hard to stop because you're thinking he's running the fade and all of a sudden – he breaks on and out right there, and that's almost low outside. You have no shot. So I'm surprised that hasn't continued. But the fade route, I could see because it can be you can miss it in that the defenders now can make a play on the ball even when you bring it down or on your way down. It takes almost a perfect throw outside. And I just think, teams have kind of gotten away from it because it'll work one game or one play, and then the next time it gets defended twice in a row, do you keep coming back to it? So I think they lose confidence in it really quickly on just the fade route in itself because ultimately it's a 5-yard, you know, if you're talking about 5 yards and in, it's a 50-50 ball. And if you start losing more than that, then you start saying, no, I'm going to move on. And you got to have, you know, a tall receiver who's super athletic where it's almost unstoppable. And I think in this day and age, nothing really is unstoppable with these super-duper athletes, especially on the defensive backside. And they've gotten longer and taller. They've gotten to the 6'1". A lot of these converted wide receivers who move to DB now are just as long and can defend those passes as well. So there's a lot of contributing factors to the fade ball not being as effective as it was years ago.
Interestingly, only two of the five successful goal line fades thrown last season targeted receivers over 6 feet, Phillip Rivers to Mike Williams and our guy Jameis to Mike Evans. But Blaine, I thought the other interesting thing that Calvin Johnson said, it's not just about height, it's about footwork too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's I just don't know if what I've said all along is we're seeing better athletes on the football field, but are they a lot more technically sound and football knowledgeable than previous years before this time? And that's where I think they're not catching up. And a lot of it is because they're just so athletic. They just depend on their athleticism to get by with everything because they can. But when you get to the elite of the elite in the National Football League, those little advantages really will set you apart from the other players. And I think that's why A.J. Brown's had so much success early. He works on those little things. He's not the tallest. He's not the fastest. He's not the best route runner, but he's working all on these facets of his game to get better each and every game. As you know, we could talk about A.J. Brown. I mean, he's a big target. He's almost like a running back playing receiver. Is that when we got into the playoffs and you start playing these elite DBs, you start seeing how they were covering them and they're studying the opponent. And they go, they know three routes he's about to run based off of his
your position on the football field, where his alignment is. These guys break these guys down and find every little inch, whether what foot he has back, how he's leaning, and what route he's running, and they get all the tips. And so now we're going to see how well he does in the playoffs. So all these things factor into being a great, great wide receiver. And guess what? A.J. Brown is mostly 80% there, which is remarkable after a rookie season.
You know, you were Captain Video when you were a player.
Yes.
And I would imagine this is one of those situations where film study plays in heavily, doesn't it?
What are you talking about, the fade route? Naturally, it's still hard to stop, though. The fade stop is the one that really got me, because I didn't really know how to defend it. It's a guess. And sometimes they'll give you a little tips. Let's say like this, a great tip that I have. I have to go against my main man and on our own team during the era, Derek Mason, who doesn't give a lot of credit, the wide receiver Derek Mason, when we were at practice running the fade route, even though he was a small stature guy, he was great at running routes. And so his fade route almost looked like everything. So when he ran the fade route, when he took a peek up, guess what I knew was coming after that? And when I say after, I mean immediately, like during that play. He's going to run an out. He's going to run a fade stop. But if he never peeked, guess what? That's a little tip. He's running that fade, and that ball's coming in that deep corner, and I'm trying to beat him to the spot with the angle that I'm taking, trying to, you know, play in the red zone. So there's little tips here and there. Some guys just disguise it a lot easier. And guess what? I would have known all those tips on Mason if I didn't practice against him daily. And I'm talking about daily.
Great stuff. All right, straight ahead. Why college football fans should feel a cold chill from what they got from the Big Ten yesterday. 7:53 on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone.